Hi guys, it's Andrea with the Codex Club. I am starting my very first podcast, and I just wanted to take the time to introduce myself and do a little thing about me. It's sometimes hard to talk about yourself unfiltered, and I just want to preface this by saying that there's no real way I can tell you everything about me. And nor would I want to. If you're at a party and someone says, yeah, I love opera, I would love to talk to that person about opera, but I'm not going to tell them everything else I like and my whole life story. That's just not appropriate, and I wouldn't want to talk to me if that happened. And I was, you know, the other person. So I took some notes, and I don't really know how to do this, so it's definitely like a learning, and I think that's sort of the current for this whole thing is learnings. So if there's anything I can do better, I'm definitely open to what other people think. But, you know, it hasn't always been easy, and I think that sometimes you do have to fall 1,000 times to finally get up and stay up and do something you love, hopefully, and be happy. I definitely know that's how life has been for me getting to this point, and I just want to share some of the things that I've been through and learned, and if there's anything valuable that you can take away from it, I really hope that it is helpful. So there are some Easter eggs in here too, because I've never been able to find like my very first acting job or you know, really known what was going to happen to me. Anyway, I'm just going to get right into it. So I want to talk about my acting and then my design. And I think that everything I love that's creative all blends together. I don't think any experience is wasted. But when I was young, I thought I knew what I wanted to be, and that has changed a lot. You know, I think you as a child will see movies and magazines, and a lot of young girls do this and think like, I want to be in a magazine or I want to be in a movie. And my parents too, like they gave me an idea of like what kind of relationship I would want to be in. Like you, oh man. Okay, I'm, again, in the spirit of learning, I'm closing my Outlook notifications. Hopefully that won't happen again. So I started out wanting to be an actor and thought I could maybe make a life of it. You know, my parents and most of your family and friends and siblings will teach you what love is and are the most likely to stick by your side, of course, throughout your life. So I'm really grateful to my support system. Even at that age till now, most of the people who I grew up with are still the people I go to. But I didn't really want to take career advice from them. And although I admire and am inspired by a lot of my girlfriends, I think we each have our own different paths. My brother and sister ended up doing wildly different things than I do. And my dad and mom, you know, as even though they're, I think, very smart, very kind people, as most children of first generation immigrants to America will tell you, life is not easy for them either. In fact, it's very hard sometimes to get through a language barrier to show people how capable you could be. And one of the blessings of my life is that I can hopefully share some of what my parents went through so that other people don't feel like it's okay to treat minorities that way. Or women, you know, my mom was an English teacher starting out, and you know, it's something that someone straight from China probably has to work a lot at to teach English in America. Anyway, so I'm watching movies, I'm reading books, and I think, oh my God, like I would love to be an actress. Lucy Liu in Payback, I thought was so, she was one of the first examples of like strong womanhood that I thought I want to be like. She's wearing this like dominatrix outfit with fur, and she's like kicking this guy's ass. And she repurposes this one line, and it's Misohoni, me love you long time, which originally I found out later was from Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. And it's said in this way that is like the paradynamics are so of that time. You know, I think the character's a hooker and the guy's white. And in Payback, Lucy Liu is like standing on top of the guy. Like she's got her foot like just twisting into the guy's body, like underneath her. Like, and it's just so, she's so still sexy, you know, but like strong and wild. And I thought, you know, I want to be like that. My parents were so conservative, very religious, and it's a nice thing to have when you're young, but just, I was like, this woman is unchained. So, this was back in the day when you had to like call the internet, and it would do that weird like beeping sound. And, I was like looking up like any sort of tip I could find online, like, what do you do to be an actor? And one thing on Craigslist I saw was like free headshots for young ladies, which at the time now I'm like, meh, that could have been sketchy. But headshots were expensive, and back in the day you needed that. They still had black and white pictures that you needed to bring hard copies of. And my dad, to his credit, even though he was so conservative and probably was like, why isn't she going to be an engineer or a lawyer? What is she doing? He brought me to this place that I asked him to take me to and made sure to be there every second. He was always very overprotective. And I mean, I was like, this studio seems to be this guy's house. And anyway, I was so happy that he was there, that my dad was there and taking care of me. Nothing happened, of course, and the pictures came out great. I got an agent who, I think that office is now defunct in Houston. They didn't really get me much, but I was still looking on my own. And the first job I got, if anybody knows about this out there, it was called Kunoichi Monogatari, I think. And it meant Tale of the Deadly Flowers. And I played this young Japanese animation girl with an English voice. I think I was paid like $100 an hour to be in this recording booth. And again, my dad came with me, and there was only one other older man like in the voice booth, and I was like so young. Again, very grateful for my dad. But I don't think he really understood what I was trying to do. And one thing I started to realize was if I wanted his respect and his support was, I mean, I just really wanted that at a young age. We connected eventually through opera because he really liked the singing. He always said that's the only type of creative art that I understand, because he used to be in like the men's chorus back at National Taiwan University, and he was very good. And on Sundays at church I would hear his voice out of all the others. You could tell it was like his voice. And I was like, okay, you know, I need to get over stage fright. And these women were larger than life. They could fill a whole auditorium just with their voice, no mic, you know. It stretched the limit of what a theatrical production could and should look like. You know, it was, everything was over the top. Like, love was always like gonna kill somebody or destroy a civilization or be someone's like one hope for happiness. Anyway, it set an impossible standard as a young child for what love should be. And also seeing my mom and dad, they're still really happy and in love. I definitely expect a lot when it comes to my relationship because of those two things. And I just was really trying to get out of Texas. So two things then happened. One was not so great, and one ended up being really, really good for me. And again, this is because there are still no rule books about how to be a performer, how to do anything really as an actor or an opera wannabe at, you know, 12. So the first thing was Barbizon, which was like a modeling school where they would give brochures out at different like malls. one of my friends at school was also going, and I didn't know anything about makeup. My mom's never worn it. She's beautiful skin. She doesn't need it. And I thought, yeah, okay. I want to learn how to do makeup if I ever have to go out for something very special. And they had conventions where you could meet maybe a super agent. They had a picture of Katie Holmes and some other celebrities on their poster. And I had been watching Dawson's Creek at the time, even though I wasn't supposed to. And I thought, let's try this. And my parents are very frugal, so they didn't want to pay after the first one or two classes. They just thought, you know, there's so many girls here who want to do this. Like, what's the likelihood that, like, half of them are going to get good agents? And they had a good point. That was true. Most people did not experience the sort of Katie Holmes thing from Barbizon. But I can only imagine how much money that place made, like, off of young girls in the Midwest who just wanted to, you know, try something. I ended up making an audition tape with my voice teacher for a school that I researched on Google called Walnut Hill, and it spoke of like a 98% college placement rate to different art schools. And, you know, I presented this to my parents. I said, I got a scholarship. I promise I won't date. I don't want to stay in this public high school. And I really didn't. It was a good school, but very math and science oriented. You know, a lot of the parents of these kids worked at NASA in Houston. And so you had very bright, motivated kids. I think it actually had the highest number of families living in that area who had like second degrees, you know, so if you went for your graduate degree or pursued higher education, you know, so everybody living there was very invested in getting a good academic foundation. And I was like hiding in the bathroom because I didn't want to sit through chemistry. I was like, just my mind has always been very, you know, right side. And so again, to my parents' credit, they heard my pitch and knew that I wasn't gonna do anything that I loved in Houston. And if I wanted to sing, if I wanted to save money in the long term and go to art school, maybe, because I was drawing too all the time and sketching. I always had sketchbooks. They were like, yeah, you know, this place seems like it would be such a great incubator and environment for you. And I met a lot of other girlfriends who were like me, you know, dedicated to fashion or, you know, singing or theater. I still see some girls on the TV sometimes that I'm like, oh my God, I went to Walnut Hill your year. That's so funny. Anyway. You never think at 15 that that's going to happen. You're just meeting people and living with them. And, you know, you do become close. I just think I was so happy to meet people who were interested in the same things at a higher rate, you know, than my old school. And then an interesting thing happened. So Barbizon was not that great of an experience. Walnut Hill really was something. And after the first half of junior year, I came home. It was my first semester back. I think I was doing like a Rice University program, you know, close to where we lived. And we did a concert, and my dad said some things that crushed me because he loved me. But he was like, you know, your voice hasn't really developed as much as I thought it would while you were away. Maybe it's my fault because I'm not there to remind you to practice every day. But like, are you sight reading still? Are you practicing? You know, your voice doesn't fully develop until your 40s anyway. But at the time I was like 80 or 90 pounds. I was this little kid and I was just not there yet. I wasn't progressing fast enough where he was like, you know, you have to start applying to colleges soon. You know, I don't want you to go to conservatory right now. The one thing I never have to remind you to do is draw, though. And I heard what he said, and it was really tough. I don't know if you ever experienced this in high school. You know, I think kids who do athletics or kids who don't get test scores that are high enough to achieve the dreams they want, it's definitely hard. But I was like, you know, this was the one art type that my dad could understand, and I've disappointed him. And I left home for this, you know. I have been gone since I was 15, and anyway, I talked to this man named Ken Tiggs, who was the dorm parent at the time. Emily Dickinson, funnily enough, like, lived in this dorm way back when and wrote a poem called Behind Stowe when she went to the school and lived there. But anyway, he would check everybody in at night, and he would see me drawing in my sketchbooks, and he said, I see what you are doing, and I think you're very talented. If you are having these types of doubts with your father and you're not sure that you want to go to conservatory, I am also head of the art department, and I would be happy to transfer your scholarship to be a visual arts major. But do me a favor, and do yourself a favor. He recommended the Parsons pre-college summer program. So that summer of junior year, I stayed in New York for the first time and tried to put together a portfolio that I could start submitting senior year. It put me in a really good place to do that. And I am very grateful for this man. I looked on Facebook later and saw that he had the same birthday, has the same birthday as me. And I always thought that was so, well, once I found out, I thought that was so funny, and I've never forgotten that lesson. And I hope that one day, if I am in someone like Ken Tiggs' shoes, that I would be able to do the same sort of mentoring or help that he gave me. So anyway, yeah, I had only applied to 4 different art schools in addition to Parsons because I liked it so much. There was Cooper Union, which was this like completely free college. It was like the Harvard of, you know, I thought, art schools. They only took in maybe like 4 visual artists a year, and you could do anything after that. And so when I met my now fiance freshman year, I was like, oh, like I was so gaga over him because of that already. Anyway, Parsons, Cooper, School of Visual Arts, which at the time didn't have the same amount of clout or name recognition as Parsons. At the time, I think Parsons had Project Runway on television, and it was just, you know, Tim Gunn. It was very hip, and they have been around longer. And then RISD, which I thought did have a lot of name recognition, but it wasn't in New York like the other 3 schools. Parsons gave me the biggest scholarship. It was an early admission ad, and so that's where I went to school for graphic design. And it's also interestingly how I fell back into acting a little bit. You know, I would hang out with these other kids who were doing all sorts of other art, and I was trying dating for the first time, which was not fun. I've never been good at it. I ended up meeting my agent at like a birthday party. I was there with my acting friend, and she was like, do you have an agent? And I said, well, but when I was a kid, but I'm in college now. And she was like, come see me Tuesday. You know, we'll have you read something and sing something. And so she became my agent and also kind of like a New York mom. You know, she would give me advice about dating, because when I say my parents were conservative, like their first kiss was at the altar on their wedding day. So yeah, even though I had met my partner now, Mark, at 18, I definitely wasn't ready at that time to be serious. And every semester of college, like, I think I had a steady boyfriend just freshman year and then the next 3 years of school, but we never talked about marriage. And, you know, it was just one of those things where you're trying to build your life. And I was doing work study all 4 years, doing like posters for all the events and little graphics. And trying to figure out what I could do with this degree, you know, like, you never want to waste your schooling. So every summer I was like, I think I was at HBO the first summer, and then New York Historical Society and Cosmopolitan Magazine for a semester. Those things were respectively video editing and exhibition design for the museum and editorial specifically. By the time I graduated, I still was like, what is that balance going to be between acting and my, you know, design experience. I had done an off-Broadway play and I was just so excited to be out of school. And I was going to Shirley's office at the agency every Friday and just like doing some freelance stuff for her theater company and also talking about castings. I ended up choosing a startup company called First Dibs that sells like luxury items. They're one of the few places on the internet where you don't have to like get a good deal. You know, I feel like people when they're shopping online are always trying to get the cheapest price, but there, you know, people were bidding on Roy Lichtenstein's. It was a way for everybody internationally to see beautiful art and not be afraid of paying a lot. So I liked working there. I thought I would learn a lot at a startup, and I think I did, even though I was specifically there to do like general digital design and retouching. The company grew by like 70% by the time I left, and I was getting sort of bored after 3 years, and moonlighting, bartending, and catering events with some actor friends in the evenings, you know, like every other actor, waitresses or bartends. And I think the company I heard about was AmeriVents, and so they did stuff like at Madison Square Garden all the time. Like, it was, you know, it was cool to like have fun and meet people. Sometimes with the design work, you can just kind of live in your headphones if you're not talking to a project manager or other designers. So I loved when my actor friend was like, I'm moving to California. Do you want to take over the the head bartender position at this one hip place up of Chinatown called Red Egg? They also did like dim sum and parties. And I said, yeah. So for like 2 years, I was doing that in the evenings. Like I would work from 8:30 or 9 to like 4:30 to 5. And then I would work all evening till 1 a.m., sleep for a little bit, and then start back up really early in the morning. And clearly, you know, maybe that was one of the reasons my dating life wasn't so great. But I enjoyed staying busy. I liked having different stuff going on. I ended up doing a movie called Mistress America, which got me my SAG card. And it's just like a scene in the opening credits where I'm kind of mean to the main character as she starts her college journey at Columbia. I think a lot of my highest profile films actually involve me being a mean character, which I've heard is often played by the nicest actors. Like for some reason there's something, like if you understand how to be nice, you understand how to be mean really well too. And so hopefully in your personal life you would choose not to be that way, but it can make an audition where you have to be mean very rich. I think I got that from like an interview with Rachel McAdams from Mean Girls. Anyway, so the acting was fine. I was doing my design work. But I met a guy at the bar one night who told me that he loved me within a week. And, you know, to anyone else out there who is in their early 20s and somebody says that to you, like, don't believe them, run, because that's not love. But I didn't know that. So I followed him to Austin, and it was just, that was like a 3 to 6 month relationship that just taught me so much in such a short amount of time. I look back on it still and think it's one of the biggest lessons, which is don't, love is not a feeling, you know, it's an ever fixed mark. That's Shakespeare. And one thing Shirley, you know, my New York mom said was, maybe love is actually looking around at the person who's always been there for you. You know, maybe that's love. And I did a movie while I was in Texas. It wasn't like just the relationship. And it turned out to be the biggest movie I've ever done, and I still get residuals from it, called Boyhood, where you see a guy actually grow up over 12 years. It's pretty cool. And I mean, I look at some of my acting work and I'm like, that's what I looked like at 19. I'll never forget that. Like, how cool there was a music video I did with Sally Shapiro called Miracle, where, yeah, I'm like, my skin will never be that soft. Anyway, so Boyhood was like also set like very close to where I grew up, and it shows this time in our politics and living in Texas that is very precious to me and my family. But I guess being 24, 25 at that point, I guess I was 23, I was like, it was the one period in my life where I really thought, like, could somebody else really love me more than they love themselves? And it's the first time someone had asked me to do that for them, you know, giving up living in New York to be with them, or, you know, sacrifice my work and career to be with them. And no one should ever really ask you that. It can be given, you know, if someone really loves you and you trust them completely, but you better be really sure they're not the wrong person. So I'm not going to get too much into it, but nobody had ever said they wanted to marry me before. And it made me really think, like, what kind of marriage would I really want? I started to go to church more, and I was looking at some of my old messages. And I had talked to Mark, my now fiancé, a few times over the years. He was at that very first freshman party I ever went to, my first week in New York. You know, and over like a decade, I'd never seen any skeletons in his closet. I just respected him so much as a friend. And he had messaged a few months before I messaged him saying, like, oh, I saw a Kid Cudi video called The Pursuit of Happiness and you look so cute. I wasn't sure. Was that you? And I was like, yes. Yes, it was. And then I guess I wrote, like, I've had a few drinks or three, and I just kind of always wondered, like, what would have happened with us? You know, I wouldn't have been ready at 18, but now I hadn't dated in a few years. I was really just working at this ad agency and going home and going to church and trying to learn to love myself. And I think that that was a really good time for me and him to meet up again. He was like, oh, I'll be back in the city. Let's do that. I think back to my text and I'm like, oh my God, I would have had to have been so sure that that wouldn't creep him out. And I'm so happy it didn't. Cause like, I could almost feel like this chemistry sometimes, like when he was in the room, and I would try not to, you know, I wouldn't think about it too much, but I mean, he is one of the most beautiful people I know inside and out, and makes all of the shitty things that I've been through, like these bad dates, this guy that I moved for who ran out on me, and, you know, it makes it all worth it. It makes me really appreciate who I have in my life, and it was very hard to trust him, but I think that every test, every life event since we got together has been for the better, and like my parents and my friends and my family, you know, I think he's taught me what love really is. So I'm so lucky. Anyway, oh my God, I'm like, we did long distance for like 2 or 3 years before I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna move again for a guy. But this time, it's like, I think this is right. This was 13 years in the making, not like a week. So I moved down to Baltimore and met some girls at my first design job here, and we were making these cards and Etsy and eventually dresses and jewelry, and we had a website and pop-ups, and I saw these other vendors that I was like, you could be part of our brand, like, this is cool. We have a store opening soon in Fed Hill. We had done a holiday store at the mall, so I'm really hoping to continue that momentum. And I think that for all those who wonder if I'm qualified to own my own business, or, you know, what makes me feel motivated to do what I do now, I wanted to make this to really share that I didn't always know I wanted to do this, but there is nothing better than working for yourself and making the illustrations that I always was making anyway for Baltimore. I never thought I would fall in love with the city, but I've been able to build a life here that I didn't really have as much in New York. It was so stressful there. Everyone's just running around trying to build credits on their resume. No one's going to buy, well, some people buy property there, but I think to invest in a city that needs development, that still has like this handmade, artisanal predominance in product. There's this very DIY feel to a lot of like the restaurants and stores here. I think because we don't get as much corporate interest in a lot of the storefronts and business, but I think that's wonderful. I think that the world needs more of that. So I'm really proud of the Codex Club. And I think that hopefully the 10 years that I spent doing design and marketing come in useful here. And my fascination with acting and singing, you know, I don't think any of that's wasted. I feel like it just has taught me to not let certain things get me down, that there are different ways to use your skills. Even though I don't really do as much acting or opera now, I still listen to it a lot. I think it informs my taste along with my design experiences and makes me hopefully a little more natural in front of a camera. And anyway, I hope you liked my abridged life story so far. And I want to bring more people into this format. Hopefully I can maybe interview another local maker and come back in a few days, maybe do a Valentine's post, reflections on love. I don't know. But this has been fun for me and I hope it was entertaining for you. And I hope that you'll support us and other local artists in Baltimore and beyond. So I appreciate the time and you hanging out with me.